I think that Chicago put on a good thing, but I can just say that Montreal did an amazing job.
Listening to their records while drooling over their handsome faces on the record sleeve, it was easy to forget that they were also Siamese twins.
I think both of the boys' sexuality was sort of fledgling and only just coming alive. Bang, bang, it's
all right. Two hot young guys, nipple to nipple for most of the film. I mean, what more do you want?
Welcome to This Way Out, the international gay and lesbian radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. Thousands rally for marriage equality in Australia. Queer athletes compete in dueling global games. And co-joined boy band twins are punkumented in Brothers of the Head. Those stories and more this week because you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Sherry Lunn.
And I'm Christopher Gall.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending August 19, 2006. Thousands of demonstrators rallied in towns and cities across Australia on August 13th to demand marriage equality for gay and lesbian couples. The National Day of Action commemorated the federal ban on same-gender marriage, which passed with bipartisan support in 2004. About 1,000 people attended a rally in Sydney, while hundreds more gathered in the Blue Mountains. Melbourne reported more than 1,500. Perth organizer Rod Swift told the Australian Associated Press that about 300 people attended a rally in his city, a record turnout despite the rain, he said. Prime Minister John Howard continually says he does not believe that discrimination should exist for same-sex couples, Swift added, but his actions in the past 2 years have only caused more inequality and discrimination. The protests also called on state governments to make changes to their laws to allow both same-gender and heterosexual de facto couples more certainty over their relationships. Among the colorful fashion statements made in Melbourne was a T-shirt that perhaps best summed up the purpose of the nationwide event. We demand the right to make the same mistake as everyone else.
U.S. President George W. Bush this week signed into law the Federal Pension Protection Act that contains two key provisions extending important financial protections to same-gender couples and others who leave their retirement savings to non-spousal beneficiaries. The legislation, with strong bipartisan support, received final congressional approval on August 3rd. The first provision allows the transfer of an individual's retirement plan benefits to a surviving domestic partner, who can then move the funds into an individual retirement account, or IRA. The surviving partner will be able to either withdraw the benefits over a 5-year period or over his or her own life expectancy. Surviving same-gender partners in the past were typically forced to withdraw the entire amount as a lump sum and incur immediate tax charges. That frequently also bumped the survivor into a higher tax bracket because the lump sum withdrawal was counted as taxable income. The second provision allows same-gender couples to draw on their retirement funds in cases of qualifying medical or financial emergencies. The federal law had previously only allowed the spouses or legal dependents of employees to access retirement funds in such situations. For gay couples and all Americans with non-spouse beneficiaries, said Human Rights Campaign President Joe Solmanese, death and taxes weren't only certain, but also times of great and unequal financial difficulty. He called the law's enactment an important day for fairness under the law in America.
Authorities in Saudi Arabia arrested 20 young men this week after raiding a suspected same-gender wedding ceremony in the southern town of Jizan, according to Agence France-Presse and The Independent Online. The Saudi Al-Watan newspaper reported that about 400 men attended the wedding party of two men and that some were emulating women. About 250 people were questioned, and all but the 20 detainees were later released. International human rights groups are trying to get accurate information about the raid and arrests. Accusations of homosexuality are reportedly used quite often to round up opponents of the Saudi government. Islamic law enforced in the country dictates sentences for deviant sexual behavior, ranging from imprisonment and flogging to execution. There have been a number of mass arrests at what the Saudi media has called gay weddings over the past few years in various parts of the country. In 2004, police raided what was described as a gay wedding party for two African men from Chad at a hotel in the city of Medina, where about 50 people were arrested. In April 2005, a court sentenced two Saudis, one Yemeni, and a Jordanian to 2 years in jail and 2,000 lashes after police raided what was also called a gay wedding. Virtually no official information has been released about the outcomes of most of the other trials or whether sentences for those convicted were ever carried out.
About 30 skinheads attacked marchers at the third LGBT pride parade in Tallinn, Estonia, on August 12th. They beat them with sticks and threw rocks and eggs as they repeatedly chanted, "Faggot." At least 15 marchers were injured, with three transported to hospital emergency rooms. Police made at least six arrests. The skinheads attacked the middle of the march, and first the women, pride organizer Lisette Campus told the website gayrussia.ru. "Young Estonian men attacking young Estonian women, it is completely shocking for us," she said. Tallinn's previous pride marches have been trouble-free, but this year has seen a rash of anti-LGBT actions in the region directed at pride events, with marches being banned, attacked, or both in Poland, Russia, Lithuania, and most recently in Riga, Latvia. "I think that we are seeing what kind of impact such situations can have on neighboring countries," Campus said. "Things in Riga were an encouragement for stupid people in Estonia." About 500 LGBT activists and allies took part in the Tallinn March, which included supporters from Bulgaria and Spain. It started 20 minutes late because of a bomb threat. Estonian prosecutors have ordered a criminal investigation into the attacks.
Turkish gays have had their problems in recent weeks, too. On August 6th, in Bursa, the country's fourth-largest city, hundreds of homophobic fans of the city's Bursaspor soccer team stopped an LGBT march from taking place. About 100 members of the transgender and gay group Gakusagi, or Rainbow, were trapped inside their headquarters by the soccer fans, who threw rocks and threatened to kill them. They escaped only when their attackers' numbers dwindled as the day's soccer match began. According to local Rainbow members, the march was planned to protest attempts by the provincial governor to shut down their newly formed group under laws supposedly designed to protect morality.
And in late July, the full press run of the latest issue of Turkey's only lesbigay magazine, Chaos GL, was confiscated by police. The summer issue of the 12-year-old publication critically analyzed the relationship between homosexuality and pornography and contained articles by several well-known Turkish writers. A judge in Ankara's 12th Justice Court approved the seizure at the urging of the Public Prosecutor's Press Crimes Investigation Bureau. Authorities said protection of general morality prompted the action. "What is attempted to be buried with a siege of general morality," Chaos GL editors said in a press release, "is the freedom of expression of Turkish national gays and lesbians."
Gay men in China are not rushing to log on to two new government-sponsored websites created just for them. The official posting forums went online in June to disseminate information on HIV and AIDS and to ostensibly allow Chinese gay men to communicate with one another. But after 2 months in service, there have been less than 50 postings, mostly by the webmasters. The reason, the government concedes, is over fears that it will use the sites to monitor what the gay men are saying. A man who used the internet to organize gay parties was arrested in May. At the same time the official government websites were going online, Chinese authorities were closing down non-governmental gay sites. One of them, used mostly by people to discuss coming out, got about 100,000 hits each day. Another site that opened in February specialized in information about safe sex and had about 400,000 hits until it was blocked. In a 2005 survey, only 15% of 482 Beijing men who had sex with men understood that they were at risk of contracting HIV, according to a report by the United Nations. Homosexuality was listed by the Chinese government as a disorder until only a few years ago, and last year authorities raided and closed Beijing's first gay film and cultural festival, so the country's estimated 30 to 50 million gay men have many reasons to be wary. China's lesbians are not even acknowledged by the government and remain all but publicly invisible.
But finally, two U.S. lesbian tennis greats will be honored in the next couple of weeks. Billie Jean King's name will be added to the National Tennis Center during an opening night ceremony on August 28th at the U.S. Open in Flushing, New York. The United States Tennis Association named its stadium after the late Arthur Ashe 9 years ago. King says she's honored to have her name added to Ashe's, the first African-American to win the U.S. Open and Wimbledon. He died in 1993 of AIDS-related pneumonia after contracting the disease through a blood transfusion during heart surgery. King told the New York Times that she and Ash will now be side by side and were both public park kids. The 62-year-old King added that we were born the same year and we fought for human rights. Billie Jean King won a record 20 Wimbledon titles and 4 U.S. Open championships during her storied professional career.
And 49-year-old Martina Navratilova's second and presumably final retirement will include entry into the U.S. Open Court of Champions. She'll be inducted on September 10th before the U.S. Open men's final and join previous Court of Champion members that include Billie Jean King. Navratilova originally retired in 1994 with a record 167 singles and 58 Grand Slam titles. In addition to working with an LGBT charitable group, she's focused on doubles competition since her return to the courts in 2000. "I'd love to play, but it's time to get on with my life," she told reporters. Navratilova, who lives with her one and only in Sarasota, Florida, says she'd like to have her own tennis academy someday.
That's News Wrap for the week ending August 19th, 2006. Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap was written by Greg Gordon and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles. For This Way Out, I'm Sherry Lund.
And I'm Christopher Gall.
That old theme of the inseparable beauty and beast in each of us gets a quirky retelling in a fanciful fable about brothers joined at the punk later in the program. Queers and their allies have really been sharing the sweat in recent weeks. Two international LGBT sporting events, the 7th Quadrennial Gay Games and the inaugural World Out Games, were held in Chicago and Montreal, respectively, in late July and early August. The competing competition resulted from a rift between organizers in Montreal, the city originally scheduled to host this year's Gay Games, and the Federation of Gay Games, the group that has overseen them since the first games in 1978. Despite discussions among the competing interests, issues between Montreal and the Federation around control over the size of the event and finances couldn't be resolved. That led Montreal organizers to join in creating the Gay and Lesbian International Sport Association, and GLISA proceeded to plan its own global sporting event called the World Out Games. The Federation of Gay Games then scheduled Chicago as the replacement site for the Gay Games, which gave that city less than half the time that others have had to plan the event. According to Chicago organizers, 11,500 athletes from 70 countries competed in 30 sports, ranging from softball to square and ballroom dancing to swimming and tennis. Montreal claimed more than 10,000 competitors from 111 countries in 35 sports that included such Olympic standards as rowing and figure skating. Heat was a factor for competitors in both cities, but it didn't prevent a new world swimming record from being set in Montreal in the 40 to 44 age category by U.S. swimmer Daniel Veitch in the 200-meter backstroke. Both the Gay Games and Out Games held related cultural and social events, and Montreal organizers also hosted over 1,500 participants from every corner of the globe for a pre-competition international conference on lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender human rights. Mainstream stars, including Cyndi Lauper and Liza Minnelli, joined out performers like K.D. Lang in opening and closing ceremonies at the different events. Pat Hogan is on the board of the Federation of Gay Games. She also competed in Montreal. She reflected on both sporting events and looked to the future during a chat with This Way Out correspondent Heather Kitching.
So, of course, I have to ask the $5 million question, since you were at both events. Which one was better?
Yeah, well, I don't want to go there because I wasn't at all of Chicago. So I was only there for the very beginning of it. So it's hard for me to compare. But I think that Chicago put on a good thing. I didn't particularly enjoy parts of the opening ceremony, and that's the only big event I went to. But I can just say that Montreal did an amazing job, a totally amazing job. It was like they had things pretty well organized. The only thing that I would have said that could have been done better as an organized myself is the way they group people together. It all worked out in the end, but I think it could have been done a little bit more systematically, but that's the only glitch that I saw, at least in my travels. But Montreal, is known as a party town, and they certainly did. put on a party, and you could see the out games wherever you went. Like, there was billboards, like, it was well promoted, so it obviously had the support of lots of people and lots of in government, you know, municipal as well as the other levels of government. I will say this too, the difference between Montreal and Chicago was that Montreal was organized from the very beginning by paid staff. Gay games started out, and until the way they always have done it, it's volunteers that work endlessly on it until, I think, you know, the year before or even less than a year before, and then they stop bringing on paid staff. So that makes a big difference in terms of the outcome, I think.
Mm-hmm.
All I know is I had a great time in Montreal, and it was hot there, really hot. Oh, God, was it hot. And I'm sure you know that the city of Montreal and the city of Chicago had to do well, tourist-wise, in terms of bringing in books for hotels, eating out, all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Just imagine if there had only been one games, how huge it would have been.
Well, you know, some of the people, not all who travel from afar, but certainly them too, competed in both games or attended both games.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I was in New Zealand in the summertime, last winter, and some of the people I was talking to down there said they were going to be going to both. I mean, the thing is, the games, whether it's out games or gay games, is more than just, it's also the cultural component of it, although most people just think of the athletic part of it. But to keep that energy and interest up, you know, I think it's going to be interesting now because Lisa will be now doing what they're calling continental games in between the big internet, the world games. So, like, next year, there's a plan to have something in Calgary on the Easter weekend. How big it's going to be and how many sports it's going to involve, I don't know that yet. And then the following year, it's going to be in the U.S., and then they'll have their international world games like Montreal in Copenhagen in 2009. And then Gay Games will have theirs next one, 2010, in Cologne, Germany.
Mm-hmm.
So I really think that gay games or gay sports are coming into their own in a big way.
Mm-hmm.
Not just for these competitions, although that certainly puts it on the map, but just I think there's a lot more recognition about it.
That was sports organizer and competitor Pat Hogan chatting with Heather Kitching during her Queer FM program on CITR in Vancouver last week about Chicago's Gay Games and Montreal's World Out Games. Organizers of each event have announced that attendance and financial proceeds exceeded expectations, and it appears that each will report a surplus. The 1998 Gay Games in Amsterdam and Sydney's 2002 Games each lost money, so that may indeed portend a promising future for each global sports group and for all competitors and fans of international queer sporting events. For information online about the Gay Games, log on to www.gaygames.com, and for the World Out Games, visit www.glissa.org.
Extra, extra, read all about it, extra.
Are you signed up for our emailed This Way Out updates? We send them out every few weeks, briefly reviewing recent and previewing upcoming program features and dishing some behind-the-scenes news about your favorite international LGBT radio show. We also send out weekly email messages describing the specific content of each upcoming program. Just email tworadio@aol.com to get one or both of these messages delivered to your email inbox. And be assured that we don't share, sell, or otherwise provide your email address or anything else about you to anyone, and we never will. Again, to receive the occasional This Way Out updates and or our weekly program information messages, ask for one or both by name when you email tworadio@aol.com. Our Steve Pride calls it the year's best punk rock movie musical about co-joined twins. Brothers of the Head is a somewhat twisted tale that Steve may have identified with a bit too strongly.
In the early 1970s, I was a bit young to truly appreciate the glam punk music explosion. But like many gay kids, I was in love with Tom and Barry Howe. Together, they were known as Bang Bang. Not only did their music deal heavily with being an outsider, Tom and Barry were really beautiful boys. Listening to their records, while drooling over their handsome faces on the record sleeve, it was easy to forget that they were also Siamese twins, co-joined just below the chest. If you're scratching your head thinking, strange, I don't remember a punk rock co-joined singing duo. Well, that's because Tom and Barry Howe only exist in a new documentary about them. A documentary so real, so riveting, that it's easy to forget it's entirely fiction.
Hi, I'm Keith Fulton, director of Brothers of the Head.
And I'm Lou Pepe, director of Brothers of the Head.
With Brothers of the Head, Keith Fulton and Louis Pepe, the acclaimed directors of Lost in La Mancha, take on a fictitious narrative story, repackaging it as a complex documentary. There are clips from a supposedly abandoned Ken Russell narrative feature film on the twins. There are interviews with movers and shakers of the music world and music scholars. There is archive footage of the twins, both in performance and just hanging out. It's here that Brothers of the Head unveils its gay sensibility with an unsettling glimpse into a relationship that is as beautiful as it is destructive. While this film has gay content, it's not necessarily a gay film. But it is a film that had to be made by gay filmmakers. So it's no surprise that Keith Fulton and Louis Pepe are an out gay couple.
Professionally, Keith and I started working together in 1990, so we've been working on each other's films for about 15 years, and we have been a couple for 14 years.
Living together and working together, the co-writers and co-directors often feel co-joined themselves.
Well, that's probably the most difficult thing of all. I mean, I think earlier on when we made our first project together, our first truly joint collaboration was this film about Terry Gilliam called The Hamster Factor. And I think we were just such wide-eyed young people then that every aspect of that process was a lot more fun. You know, we could kind of enjoy reaping the benefits together of the work that we made together. I think now it's become harder because this is now our third film that we've made together, really fourth, actually. And it becomes difficult, especially during these periods when you're doing a lot of press and, you know, you kind of want to be able to go home and not think about it and not talk about it anymore. So it definitely has an impact on our personal relationship. You know, when we go out on press tours, we often get two hotel rooms because we know that if we have the same hotel room, we're going to sit there and stew about this review or that review. So we need to kind of carve out time for what's work and what's not.
Yeah, and also it's like marital bliss cannot be a prerequisite of the job, you know. You know, your typical couple, they get to come home to each other at the end of the evening and console each other about the jerk at work. But for us, you come home to the jerk at
work. We are the jerk
at work,
right.
In the film, one of the twins, Tom, has sex with a female reporter, forcing Barry to become an unwilling voyeur. At a party, Barry makes out with another guy. But the real homoerotic elements of the film are how the twins interact with one another.
It's my belief that the homoerotic thing about two guys being tender is from those of us in the world who do not have identical twins with whom we have an incredibly intimate relationship. Harry and Luke have this relationship and a kind of emotional and physical intimacy with each other that I think is inherent to that relationship. But for those of us who don't have that, we only associate that kind of intimacy with sexuality. And it's, of course, incredibly titillating, but I don't think it registers the same way for them that it registers for those of us watching.
I mean, that said, it is definitely our point of view in the film looking at them. I mean, it's a fascinating and sometimes erotic thing to look at. The way they behave is not in itself erotic, but the way we present it might well be because it is to us.
Two hot young guys, nipple to nipple for most of the film. I mean, what more do you want? Come on, think about it. Like the typical gay film, the poster requires that you have a really cute guy showing some skin and that you've got the promise of that in this film. Well, we got two of them in this one, so, and they even kiss at one point. So
I would hope that a gay audience just makes a choice to go see what sounds like an interesting movie.
No, but there will be a porn film based on Brothers of the Head. I mean, the title suggests that they can, Chi-Chi LaRue must be able to come up with one for this one.
Tom and Barry Howe are played by newcomers Harry and Luke Treadaway.
For me, certainly Barry was no more homosexual than he was heterosexual. I think both of the boys' sexuality was sort of fledgling and only just coming alive
and not tainted by any society kind of...
Certainly not any kind of preconception of what you should be or, you know, and And certainly, you know, let's be honest, you know, they've lived joined together for the whole of their lives. You don't think that, you know, you'd have some experimentation in some way with, you know, with your brother that you've been connected to. This is Tom and Barry I'm talking about now. But, you know, so for them, I think having that physical connection to someone will certainly make you a tactile and intimate person with that person. And so I think that kiss in that scene, I think, you know, you could take it to mean whatever you wanted it to, but I don't think there was, for me, it wasn't that Barry was having a romantic, blossoming love affair with Paul Day, but it was a physical moment and one which he felt he craved due to the attentions of Laura Ashworth to Tom. And, you know, if anything, it was some sort of looking to find that in someone else. And Paul was someone he respected and loved and, you know, liked working with. So it was probably natural that it would be him.
But I think if you realise that they've come from living by themselves without any rules and without any sort of societal frameworks to live in, it just becomes people acting on their impulse, as opposed to if you're brought up and, you know, enforced, you know, you give your daughter a Barbie and you give your son an Action Man, well, then you're suddenly painting a very strong picture for kids at an early age. And if you're brought up with a bit more space about what's right and what's wrong and rules and stuff, you know, in terms of physical life with other people and stuff, then really you just act on your impulse. And I think it's kind of what I like about Tom and Barry is that they don't feel boxed in by rules and they don't feel that anything's right or wrong, just that they feel pretty okay with doing what they feel instinctively.
This has been a conversation with Keith Fulton, Louis Pepe, Harry Treadaway, and Luke Treadaway. Brothers of the Head is from IFC Films. You can find more information on this movie at brothersofthehead.com or prideonscreen.com. I'm Steve Pride. Thanks for listening.
Can you not feel it? Can you not feel my soul calling out? Out calling out to you. My heart, friend, 'cause this is a message of love to you.
Thanks for tuning in to This Way Out, the International Lesbian and Gay Radio Magazine. This week, Sherry Lund, Christopher Gall, Rex Walkner with Bill Kelly, Graham Underhill, Heather Kitching, and Steve Pride contributed program material. You heard music from the movie Brothers of the Head, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Remember, you can listen online to This Way Out exclusively at outinamerica.com. Click on the features link on their front page, or use the link at the top of our website, thiswayout.org. Most This Way Out operating expenses are funded by direct charitable donations from our listeners. Thank you. Log on to thiswayout.org to see how you can help keep this program on the air and choose from some special LGBT movie, music, and history CD thank you gifts. You can also write to us at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and the entire This Way Out family, I'm Greg Gordon. We all thank you for listening on WDIY Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, 6RTR Perth, West Australia, KFAR Knoxville, Tennessee, and more than 150 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Stay tuned.